Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapelake Graylian, along with Tom Luongo. It's been a little while since Tom and I talked, and we have a lot to catch up on, like free agency, the draft, and one of the superstars of the game decides to leave. Believe me, we have some stuff to say about that, all coming up on The Rink.
Well, Tom, I don't know exactly how the day has been for you, but I know how it has been for me. From the excitement of going to development camp to basically what turned out to be the inevitable that Super Joe Sakic, captain of the Colorado Avalanche, ended his 20-season career today, which pretty much everybody knew was going to happen. The Avalanche kind of let things leak, even put out the press release on their website several hours before he actually retired. So it's in classic internet fashion. I know I have, plenty of memories and things, a few things to say about Joe Sakic, but actually I'm curious about hearing from somebody who isn't an Avalanche fan, because most of the time when I hear somebody talk about Joe Sakic, all I ever hear is always great, always classy, great player. But as an Avalanche fan, I know how I feel about him and how other Avalanche fans felt about him, but I don't really get a sense of what he meant league round. And I was curious where you stand and what you think about Joe Sakic when what do you think about when you think about him as a player?
A guy that I wish to hell we had in Buffalo. Probably the closest player to me, it seems that he's kind of to a Buffalo fan, he would be the equivalent of Pat LaFontaine, a guy so well loved and so well liked in the community and everything else. The way Buffalo fans talk about Patty LaFontaine is what I see in how other people talk about Joe Sakic. And as a hockey fan, I've said it before when we were talking about Wah and Brodeur earlier in the season, and I'll say it again: privileged to watch the man play. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I first came back to the game back in the late 90s, I hadn't picked a team at that point and everything else, and it was watching Sakic and Forsberg, and I always said, I always thought that I'd say that, if I had one guy to build my team around, I would pick Peter Forsberg, and I have to probably restate that if I had a guy to pick, it would probably, of the two now, in retrospect, you'd have to go with Sakic. And you can't give a man a better answer compliment than that. I mean, mm-hmm. if I wanted a guy on my team, I would pick him because he's done everything. There was something I was reading, a bunch of tributes and stuff on Puck Daddy and a variety of other places today, the aggregation of all the superlatives I've put around. And it's something that nobody wants to ever remember, which is that he was a great two-way player. Mm-hmm. He was always willing to do whatever it took to win, and he didn't. And it's that kind of thing, that kind of quiet greatness, and the fact that nobody has anything mean to say about the guy.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they all go, "Yeah, Joe." wow, and those kind of players are just not that common.
No, and, they're not.
They're really not. I mean, even when guys like Brett Hull retire. Right. When you got a guy like Brett Hull and he retired, Brett Hull conjures up a lot of mixed emotions for a lot of people. On the other side of it, we have Claude Lemieux retiring today, and that guy brings up a lot of mixed emotions. and the other side of it is that, this kind of thing it's different. It's the same as Steve Yzerman. It's the same as, maybe even Mario Lemieux and a few others, that they're just these players that are, head and shoulders in every way what we want our sports player, our hockey players or our sports heroes or whomever to be. Mm-hmm. It's the guy we when we're kids we want, and as adults we rarely get, and then we have to remind ourselves that, every once in a while, really, there are guys that, do it right.
Yeah.
And beginning to end. And the only thing that, in my mind that is a shame is that last season was such a disaster.
Yeah.
And that's the way this guy has to go out, I think, is an absolute tragedy.
Yeah. That, you know, I get tired of one of the things, obviously, keeps coming up, and you see posted all around in blogs today, and is, of course, the snowblower incident, which to me is basically it was fun and funny in a way. It was not, you know, it's not funny to see somebody get hurt, but it was a silly way. It was a silly thing in a way. And now all of a sudden it just isn't silly anymore. It isn't fun anymore. It's not funny anymore. It's a, it's almost like, Sean Avery's sloppy seconds comment is people right. just love to bring it up just to get a laugh, get a rise or whatnot. It's unfortunate that's kind of a strange asterisk that his career is ending on.
In a way that it's really kind of I would look at it as you know, faux cynical armor. It's really just cynicism. You know, it's that kind of faux insouciance of, you know, I'm better than all of this, and I don't want to have, you know, an emotional. I don't want this to be emotionally connected to it and all that. And that's just garbage.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we watch this game for a particular reason, and most of us don't watch it to be able to sneer at people.
Yeah.
We watch it because we want to see men do great things and give us good entertainment. And okay, well, that's Joe Sakic.
Yeah,
and I'm not gonna remember the snowblower incident. I'm gonna remember, you know, I'm gonna remember every goal that he scored against the other team that I was rooting for when I wasn't rooting for the Avalanche, which was very rare, frankly.
Yeah, his that wrist shot. I watched several kind of tribute videos, best of videos on YouTube today, and TSN had one with a wrist shot. I remember seeing this wrist shot, and they slowed it down, zoomed in, and looked at just his stick and how much flex he could get out of that stick. How fast that wrist shot got off was just amazing, and in such little space.
Right.
It was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I watched the thing they had on NHL.com today at lunch, and, you know, just remembering, you know, I remember having watched most of those games and going, yeah, this guy was a killer. I mean, he understood what it meant to be the kind of player that he was supposed to be, which was you bring your best when it mattered the most. And he was always there. He was always reliable. He was always dangerous. You know, I remember, you know, rooting against Colorado for Edmonton, believe it or not, you know, years ago, and going, you know, put Sakic on the ice and he's going to score. Mm-hmm. Or he's going to put me through multiple butt clenching moments in the next 45 seconds. And that's not good. My heart can't take this. And that's, you know, that's it. That's all you ask for out of these players. When they show up, give me everything you got every night, as best you can. And there was one I can't remember who it was. I was reading it this morning. To think about it in terms of his consistency over 20 seasons is astounding. Night in, night out. Whether the kids are sick, whether the wife is pissed off, whether you know what this, it doesn't matter. Every night, 82 games a year plus the playoffs. He did it. He showed up. It's astounding. It really is.
Yeah, a few of the looking at, of course, you know, they were pouring out the stats today, and just a few of the career stats that he has. He's eighth overall in points, and the nearest right. Nearest active competitor is Mark Recchi at 14th. He's 14th overall in goals. Nearest would be Teemu Selanne, and he's 11th overall in assists. Nearest again, Mark Recchi. Of active players in the playoffs, he's seventh in points, seventh in goals, and 20th in assists,
and first in overtime playoff winners.
Yep, with eight. Yeah,
that's eight.
Okay. Well, how about this? He's also third in overtime game winning goals in the regular season. The right. two players ahead of him, Wayne Gretzky and Brett Hull.
Right.
And he had 19. Now, Brett Hull and Gretzky both had 24. Yeah,
it's insane. You know, and you know, part of his longevity, but you know, it's part of it be able to perform at that level at 38, 39 years old.
And not only did he win the Olympic gold, he was also MVP of the Olympic tournament, and he had 4 points in the gold medal game.
Right.
He two cups, of course, with Conn Smythe. in one of them. All-Star MVP in 03-04. Here's something that's easy to forget. Canadian Major Junior Player of the Year. I believe that was 88, I believe it was.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
that was. Yeah, that's how it sounded about right.
Yeah, and then, you know, and how long is it? You know, 20 seasons with the Avs. He's got career points with the franchise, career assists, career goals, games played. You know, it's just he's got all the franchise stats with, by a country mile.
And handed the cup to Ray Bourque.
Yeah, immediately. Just here you go.
and then hugged him and patted him on the back and hugged him and said, "Go." I'm like, almost as cool as Steve Yzerman. Yeah. Almost as cool as Steve Yzerman handing off the Vlade Konstantinov. Almost, but not, you know, but for different circumstances, different reasons and different circumstances, right. Obviously.
Yeah. No, if, and you know, it's somebody mentioned today, and I only saw this on Twitter, so it's unconfirmed. That he may have actually offered the captaincy, to Ray Bourque, when Bourque joined the team, for that full season. And, which, you know, of all the things I can't really get behind that decision, mostly because now that he's retired, I can't imagine who's going to be the captain of the team. It's going to be, right. That's the hardest thing for me. Who is it actually going to be that's ready right now to be the captain of the team that's not going to seem like a stand-in? You know, I think eventually it's going to be Stastny, but that, right. I don't think he's ready for it. So that's, you know, that to me is how I really feel about him. Mm. You know, that's where I look to. He's, you know, he's one of the last franchise players, you know, after Yzerman, you know, who
from
else,
that era, yeah.
You know,
and from now, that era, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's Brodeur is going to be next, or, well, maybe. And you've got Brodeur.
Maybe Iginla, but not
again, too. But Iginla is another, but he really is another generation behind.
Yeah.
You know, he's still, you know, not that same. He's not there yet. And he's got plenty of gas in the tank, that guy. So,
yeah.
He's not going anywhere yet. The last one from that era, from the you know, early 90s. Mm-hmm. Late 80s, early 90s. There's really not many people left, and so Chelios is gone, Sakic is gone.
Yeah, but Chelios moved around. I mean, Yzerman and Sakic are the last ones to really stay with that one franchise, you mm-hmm. know, their entire career. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, obviously DiPietro probably will, but he's not franchise. Yeah, I mean that's
he's not franchise, and he may be done from everything I've heard. So that would even be worse. I mean, and that's a interesting way of going forward and now looking at free agency as to why the Islanders picked up two goaltenders in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ricky DiPietro may be done. Yeah. That injury may, you know, sorry, Islanders fans, but you know, that's just terrible. Yeah. So, all right. So we move from Super Joe and, you know, at the end of the day,
yeah,
it's a shame.
The only other thing I wanted to say was it was my favorite moment of Super Joe was in 96 when the Avs won the cup in their first year here. Right. I was in radio at the time and was part of the quote unquote press and got to be on the press platform and all of that for the parade and afterwards, you know, the rally afterwards at the courthouse. And it was just awesome to, you know, when he came out, you know, big presentation, comes out from with a smoke machine and holding the cup over his head. And it was really, really cool. That was one of my favorite memories of Super Joe Sakic. So, yeah. So, well, I guess we move on from Joe Sakic, unfortunately, and into the future with this round of free agency, since we haven't had a chance to really talk since free agency began.
Right.
And there was a whole lot of moves. I mean, we can talk about the big ones. We can talk about teams. We can talk about divisions. I know you and I were talking a little bit before we started about the Northeast. And some of the significant changes going on around the Northeast.
Well, the big ones are that Bob Gainey's pretty much tried to remake the Montreal Canadiens from the ground up. And as has Brian Burke, tried to remake the Toronto Maple Leafs from the ground up. And it, I find it interesting to think that the Habs have made all of these moves to become smaller and, in my mind, not that, not very much better. Different, but not much better. I don't really see a tremendous improvement. I mean, you're bringing in Camilleri, Gianta, Hal Gill, Jaros Pacek, and Scott Gomez, and you're moving out Saku Koivu, Mike Komisarek. I mean,
does it just feel like does it kind of feel like change for the sake of change rather than an actual plan, or what, how does
almost,
it feel?
It almost feels that way. Yeah. It almost feels that in some ways you almost think that they threw out the baby with the bathwater by throwing out Saku Koivu. Mm-hmm. And Kovalev, who wanted to stay, and and this small number of fans that showed up to protest and who they get to again need to re-sign Kovalev, who then turns around and signs in Ottawa. One wonders if there was a bit of spite involved in that or not. That's the part. And Komisarek signs in Toronto. So there's a lot of interdivisional movement in the Northeast where you saw guys go from one team in Montreal was selling off that entire team. Now granted, that entire roster imploded. Mm-hmm. That entire team imploded. But the question is, who imploded? Was it Kovalev and Komisarek and Koivu, or was it that their kids couldn't handle the load? And then you've got they traded off Higgins as well. He's a good player. I don't understand how they I just don't think at the end of the day that, well, we'll see. We'll see if Bob Caney's got a plan or not.
Right. Plus they're what to me looks like blind devotion in Carey Price, where that doesn't seem – I mean, I don't think they'd be getting rid of Carey Price anytime soon, but at the same time, that mm-hmm. seemed like more of an issue than just about anything else to me.
Was it Mike Komisarek that was the problem, or was it, Bouillon and Markov and everybody else? At the end of the day, Gainey's going to – I would presume to think that Gainey knows the tenor of his team obviously better than me. If he didn't, then why aren't I GM in Montreal? but that said, I'm supposed to be the commentator here, so I'm just not all that, impressed by the changes in Montreal. I am, on the other hand, and loath to say this, that Brian Burke has done a very interesting job in rebuilding quickly the Toronto Maple Leafs, and
he's basically turning him into the Toronto Ducks.
Well, duh, and that worked. Let's look at what he's picked up. He's picked up Komisarek and Beauchemin for his back end.
Which Beauchemin, that's a bit of a coup. That's a great signing right there.
I think so, especially at a three. He's at 3.8.
Yeah,
Komisarek at four at 4.5. Mm-hmm. They had the cap space to burn. They not only had the cap space to burn, but obviously, they've got the money to burn. If these things don't work out, this is Toronto. They can throw these guys aside and go on from there. As opposed to bad signings like the Philadelphia Flyers, who refuse to get it. unless they intent on forcing guys into of signing guys to contracts, and then when they don't work out, forcing them out of the league.
Right.
Think about where Danny Briere is going to be at the beginning of the season. My guess is on the Phantoms.
Yeah.
Unless they trade him off, because they have nowhere to go with his contract and no one wants it.
No one's going to want that contract, but would you take Danny Briere for half that contract for a half price off waivers?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. They've already paid out $18 million on that contract, so it's not as bad. But yeah, so are they going to be willing? So that's going to be the question. Right. And we'll see what happens, because they've been shopping him for over a year. They can't move him.
Right, but instead they get Pronger in and then sign him to a 7-year extension.
Yeah, so he's going to be 42 years old now. Is this guy the second coming of Chris Chelios?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I would think that the way Chris Chelios, one of the reasons for his longevity, in my opinion, is that he wasn't smacking guys around as much, or he wasn't charging everything full guns ahead, unlike, let's say, a Pronger, who does get very physical and in a couple of years is going to be a lot more injury prone because of it.
Yeah, he is. He should be at the very least, or he's going to have to change, or he's going to have to get crafty in his old age and change his game. We'll see what happens. I'm not saying that signing Pronger to an extension was a bad idea, but a seven-year deal, you know, given that, who knows if this, you know, unless some of these teams have an inside track on how the CBA is going to change in terms of being able to rid themselves of these contracts under the next CBA, because this CBA is not going to last forever.
Right.
And think about, you know, where some of these contracts are going to be after the second option year is up, which is not this year, but the following season when they have to renegotiate. You know, are teams like Philadelphia and a few others setting themselves up for quote unquote revenge against the smaller market teams that force quote that force welfare on them, mm-hmm. and are going to get their revenge by being able to dump these contracts and come up with liberated out clauses for these long term deals that have, you know, effectively circumvented the salary cap now in order to dump them, be able to dump these things at less of a penalty later on. We'll see what happens.
Well, he is very highly skewed in his contract. I think the last 2 years are pretty much for league minimum, $525,000, which I thought that there was a certain amount that you could tail off by. I didn't think that it was quite that much.
Well, they did that with Breer, because the last 2 years in Breer's contract are like $2 million and $3 million and $2 million. So that the heavily front-loaded contract. And it, you know, and under the CBA rules, there's absolutely no reason not to front load the contract.
Right.
For an older player, for a younger player, you don't want to front load the contract because you don't want them, you know, you don't want them that comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, so at least that's the way I see it off the top of my head. But maybe that's still not a particularly good assessment of it. But I. So, yeah, the Northeast becomes interesting when you think about those two teams, and then in the context of what Boston, Buffalo, and Ottawa have done or not done. Mm-hmm. And Ottawa did re-sign Chris Neal, and they signed Alexei Kovalev, so they got their extra top six forward to give them some scoring depth that they've needed forever. But, you know, then we have to talk about Lahiri.
Right, he's the issue, not what they signed, what they didn't sign.
Right.
You know, had they actually been able to get rid of him, they would have known that they had the money to play with a little more maybe in free agency. But at the same time, it's just turning into a joke.
The whole Danny Heatley scenario. I think Danny Heatley has become a joke, and it's, and I think it's sad. I mean, when you really stop to break it down, you know, as you were saying to me before we went on the air, that I want to be traded. Wine. I don't like it. Fine. Trade me. Yeah. I have a deal. The deal's a pretty good deal considering the situation. I don't want to go there. And then he has the godforsaken balls to turn to Kevin Lowe and Steve Tambellini, two guys who Heatley should be, you know, honored to clean their jock straps. It had the nerve to turn those guys. Tambellini flew and Lowe flew out there to have a face-to-face meeting with him, and he turned them down.
Yeah. Oh, he turned him down when he wants the heck out.
If I was Kevin Lowe, I would have punched him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the unmitigated gall, hubris,
yeah,
I don't know, chutzpah, whatever you want to call it, is insane. And for an Edmonton team that, you know, is going to play some up tempo offense with Pat Quinn,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I in no way do I understand what's going through his head, other than, you know, I'm Lahiri.
Yeah. And accountability issue that he just doesn't want to own up to, that's the only thing I can think of. Because if he played for Pat Quinn, he's going to have to, he'd certainly have to be accountable.
He's gonna have to skate both ends of the ice.
Yeah, and he doesn't seem. Yeah, and he's not Alexander Ovechkin. You know, Ovechkin doesn't skate both ends of the ice very often, but he does it more than Heatley does.
Yeah, I think everybody does it more than Heatley does. Yeah. But the only guys who don't skate both ends of the ice less than Heatley are the goaltenders.
Yeah, it's true.
Ovechkin is Russian trained.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to play two-way. He knows how to play defense if he wants to.
Yeah.
And when he does play defense, he's phenomenal at it. He doesn't necessarily have to. I mean, it was the same knock on Breer when he was in Buffalo. He's going to be the guy who's always left. He's always going to be the forward left high.
Mm-hmm.
To accept the breakout pass. Right. So, I mean, that's part of the system that they Spruce Row and by extension Lindy Ruff, had in place. It was always we take advantage of it. So he may not be the best at defense, but with his breakout speed and his ability to make plays, why do you want him coming back that deep? That's what his line mates are for. Mm-hmm. So, but if he has to, he will.
Yeah. The Heatley scenario has just become absolutely ridiculous. I wish that he would just say, if you want to trade, you get traded. And it's not to be, you're not going to get traded for a bag of pucks. You're going to get traded for something that is also going to be in the interest of the club. So, right. If that's the deal and you want out, then get the hell out. That's all right.
Right. Yeah. And, the Edmonton Oilers were not only willing to pony up pretty good players. I mean, they're willing to give up Andrew Cogliano. Mm-hmm. What I think annoys me most about this is that I have to be on the side of Brian Murray. that really bothers me. Yeah, it really bothers me. I mean, I have to agree with the list, but that just, but he's right. But Murray's right, and he should stick with his guns, and he should tell Healy, worst case scenario, you're playing, and if you're going to sell, you're not going to improve your trade value, and you ain't going anywhere. Call his bluff.
Yeah, I would absolutely call his bluff. If I were saddled with him, I would say, you know what, you're sitting the first 10 games. Watch from the booth.
I don't know if I'd do that because that doesn't really help you. But I would skate him on the fourth line a couple of times.
Ooh, ouch!
I would skate him on the fourth line with the bangers and say, get out there and you get to skate with the rookies and you get to go bang bodies. And if you're not willing to do it, I'm plastering your butt on the bench. Mm-hmm. You ride pine. You don't run this team. I do. And if that's, if I were Clouston, Corey Clouston, that's what I would do. But, sorry, son. you want out. You don't like it. You don't even get to play the power play.
Yeah.
You get to skate the fourth line. You get 7 minutes a night. You earn your way back into top 6 minutes. You don't get them because because of X, Y, and Z. You've told me you don't want to be here. Prove to me that you want to be here. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Yeah. Prove your value so that we can move you to a place that you actually want to go. And that's fine. But just prove your damn value on the ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Prove to the other 29 teams in this league that you're not a head case.
Or 28, because I don't even think Atlanta would have him back.
No, I don't think they want him back. No. Now, interestingly, I think Atlanta, speaking of Atlanta, I think they made some very good moves. They made some good, solid moves early in the they signed Antropov. I think they signed Antropov. They said signed Antropov to probably too much money, and then they re-signed a bunch of they basically re-signed their guys, Thorburn, Reasoner, Slater, Reasoner, and whatnot. And they got, wasn't there a trade?
With Atlanta? I don't remember a trade with Atlanta.
There was something good about what happened in Atlanta as well that I was reasonably impressed with. But
that they got an associate GM so that maybe they can pass the torch? Was that what it was?
Maybe. I guess. Maybe I heard that Don Waddell got run over by a bus and maybe that was it. No, sorry. That wasn't. It was Michael Jackson. He died. That's right. Never mind. How I confuse those things, I don't know. And then, as a footnote on the Northeast, the Sabres picked up Steve Monador for a couple of years at reasonable money. And I think that's a good signing to get some toughness and another right-handed shot and, to at least replace Jaroslav Bacek on the right side. He's not going to replace Jaroslav Bacek's minutes by any stretch of the imagination. But at the very least, they'll add some toughness and some a natural righty, which the Sabres really need. So,
and Spacek was pretty much the only guy that Buffalo lost a free agency.
At this point, because they really didn't have anything else in unrestricted free agency. They had that, and they have a bunch of restricteds. Clark MacArthur opted for arbitration. Stafford and Sakara haven't been signed yet, but they haven't been offer sheeted either. So, not that I expect either of them to really be offer sheeted. So, no, they didn't. They weren't set up with a whole lot of UFAs. They have a bunch of RFAs, so they'll get signed. I'm not really worried about that. Mm-hmm. The question is whether or not Regier makes a trade. That's what he's going to have to do. He's long on left wing. He's kind of short on right wing, and he's very long on NHL quality defense at this point. So between prospects and guys in on the roster. He needs to move out at least one or two and rebalance his lineup.
Yeah.
Oh, a Finnegan. We also lost a Finnegan off, but that's addition to subtraction.
And addition by subtraction.
That's what I'm looking for. Yeah. Like Finnegan off wound up playing in the KHL. He's not going to come back to you.
I don't think he's going to be signing with anybody.
Unless he goes down to
Florida, which seems to be where old men go. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, the issue, and that was part of the reason why we couldn't trade Finnegan off last year, is that he was making noise about going back to Russia. Mm-hmm. So no one was going to sign him and try and do a reclamation project on him if he wasn't going to be willing to, you know, put his heart into it and play in the NHL anymore. That's going to be a more common theme. I think that's going to be something we're going to have to watch out for in the future a lot. And that teams may not make moves because they're wondering about how their RFAs or their prospects that they have in the pipeline are going to react to potential offers from the KHL.
Mm-hmm. Nope, you're
something
right.
to think about.
You're right. So. And there's already been a few questions about who's going to go, who's staying, I think there's already a dispute between the KHL and the NHL, and the NHL signing a guy who's already under contract with the KHL.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I think that's already started up, so it should be a fun season for that. Northeast was pretty much Boston. We barely touched on them, but they barely did anything other than locking up Tim Thomas, which had already happened with a 4-year extension at $5 million a year, which I don't see any problem with Boston not really doing anything because they barely lost anybody, and they other than really Monitor, or I mean,
right.
And Monitor's
time in Boston was over. He wasn't one needed or wanted. He was being used forward, which was a disaster. Mm-hmm. They did pick up Steve Bajan from Dallas. Good pest, good fourth liner, good guy in the faceoff dot, good penalty killer. And they re-signed Mark Recchi for another year. So, and they got David Krejci signed to a 3-year extension, which is the big thing.
Yeah,
that's the big news for them.
All good. I mean, they didn't do any damage.
That's all good. Peter Chiarelli's got a good core in place. He's got his core signed, and Tim Thomas got his payday, which he just certainly deserves. And I don't think there's any issue in Boston. I don't think they really need to get much better. And they may have to improve at the deadline a little bit, but I think we'll see how things go. But I don't think really Boston needs to improve much.
Yeah,
where they were, they should have no problem. Dominating the Northeast again. I don't see anybody really having improved dramatically. You know, none of the other teams in the Northeast have really improved dramatically to really challenge them at this point. Yeah. So that's fine.
Yeah. In the North, I want to talk about the Northwest a little bit, mostly because, not just because the Avalanche are in the Northwest, but also because it's one of the few divisions where everybody got better. We were talking a little bit about this, but from every team got something that certainly works in their favor for next season. Looking at Vancouver, they got the Sedin twins back, which doesn't seem like it's not really free agency in a way, but they avoided free agency with them. And 5 years at $6.1 a year, that's, you know, for two guys, equal contracts, that's not bad.
No.
And then they got Samuelson from Detroit.
Right, that was a good. That was a great signing.
Yeah,
that shifts the balance of power in the Western Conference, and then obviously the big one, of course, is Calgary, mm-hmm. making the big splash and getting J-Bo Meester.
Right,
and then you know they re-signed Adam Partey and David Moss. It's not a big deal, and they picked up Freddie Schustrom to fill out the bottom of their lineup. It's obvious that Calgary is going to go with the top eight. The big eight guys for as much money as possible, keep them and then fill the rest of the lineup up with scrubs. So that's what they're going to do. That's how they're going to run it. And then we'll see how that works for them.
Well, and you also look at what they lost. They basically aren't re-signing Bertuzzi. That's always a good thing. Mad Mike Keenan's out on his ass. And Jordan Leopold went to that hell that is career enders in Florida.
Florida.
Yeah. So really they certainly improved that way.
Right, and then Colorado made the
– Avs got a goalie.
Avs got a goalie. His name was not Martin Baron, which is probably a good thing because Biron is a notable slow starter, and the last thing the rebuilding Colorado club needs is shaky goaltending in the first half of the season.
Right. Well, on top of that, my thing was I was hoping for Clemenson, actually. And, you know, that was a hope. But, you know, I'll take Anderson. I'll take that right. any day.
Right. You've got two goaltenders, and Peter Budaj is re-signed, so you've got two. Your goaltenders aren't going to cost you a lot of money. You're free to get extensions done with Does Stasniander an extension? Has he been signed to an extension, or is his?
I think he has. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, as things work out, they work through the rebuild. There, you know, there's no reason to spend a lot of money on goaltending at this point. But the big move was obviously moving out Ryan Smith.
Oh, it's huge, and yeah. It was good. And there was a lot of debate as to what the return, whether or not the return was worth it. I think it was absolutely a good move. Get a couple of younger guys. One of them was, I think it was top point getter on the power play for defenseman with LA and Quincy.
Kyle Quincy's that was a good pickup.
Yeah,
you needed that kind of puck moving defenseman on the on the back end.
I'm very happy with that move, even though it's unfortunate that the signing essentially of Ryan Smith didn't work out, but it could have been a lot worse. And if it was the same output that we were seeing over and over, that we had seen in the last 2 years from Ryan Smith, well, then it would certainly be a problem. And also, if you stack up onto this, the trade of Ryan Smith, something that Joe Sakic said today in his press conference was that he had told Pierre Lacroix 2 weeks previous that he was going to retire. And right. So obviously the Ryan Smith trade was the Sakic factor was a known entity at that point.
Right.
So
right.
It wasn't let's keep a veteran around for these younger guys. It was, okay, we're moving ahead with all of this knowing what we know now.
Right. And at the end of the day, some moves don't work out. It's good that they wound up getting at least a reasonable return for Ryan Smith. And you got to remember that guys like Ryan Smith, the way they play the game, beyond the age of around their early 30s, 32, 33, their game tails off very quickly. Mm-hmm. And, guys like that will quickly go from a first line winger to a third line winger in a heartbeat. And it could happen in a season as their bodies start to break down. So, you're not going to contend. Sakic's gone. Get what return you can for him, and don't be saddled with that with a contract that you don't want to pay out. You know, LA needs veteran leadership, and they're a team on the rise. Colorado's a team on the rebuild. It's a natural. It's a natural move.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, because as you said, as we talked about many times with Dean Lombardi saying, I knew I was going to get young. I didn't know I was going to get that young that quickly, mm-hmm. and be that reasonably and realistically be that successful. It's a proactive move, I think, on Lombardi's part to grab a guy like Smith to tutor Dustin Brown at all.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And I want to talk a little bit about that original Ryan Smith signing in a moment. But looking at the rest of the Northwest, the Oilers basically trade up Dwayne Roloson for Nikolai Haabibulin. And
right.
that's certainly an improvement right there. I can't see any complaints about that.
I guess if Haabibulin still got another year or two in him, mm-hmm. yes, but 4 years for $15 million? I guess, okay. If you want to go 4 years on what, Haabibulin's what, 36, 37 years old?
Yeah.
I
don't think that he's a...
36.
I don't think he's quite the Dominic Hasek, play forever in a decade. But really, Roloson was looking for 2 years, and they only wanted to give him one. You might as well, if you have a guy who is going to at least be comparable for a couple of years, give him the shot.
Sure.
If you're willing to go with him, and I think Roloson had really outlived his tender there in Edmonton. I don't think that they were happy necessarily with him.
I don't know why. He was probably the best player they had down the stretch, frankly.
Mm. He was certainly streaky. I mean, he gave his backups the opportunity to take the job.
But I mean, again, it's an Edmonton team that's got a lot of holes that need to be filled. So, mm-hmm. But that's fine. I mean, Roloson lands on his feet on the island. lending credence to the idea that Rick DiPietro's career is probably possibly over. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Edmonton picks up Hobby Bolin, so they improve their goaltending. But they still have, I still think they have issues on the blue line.
Yeah. And the Minnesota Wild, of course, get
the Minnesota Adler. Wild. I find that really funny, actually.
How so?
The Minnesota Wild trade one top flight Slovakian off injured winger for another.
Good point.
It's almost exactly. I mean, are Marian Gaborik and Martin Havlat were they separated at birth? I mean, because their career paths were almost identical. I would not have paid Marian Gaborik that money. Under no circumstances would I have given him that money. Not with his recent injury history and his lack of performance in the playoffs when Minnesota's been there. On the other hand, Havlat at that price that was paid, I think is fine. Mm-hmm. Havlat for $5 million a year to Minnesota, who I think is all around, I think is a slightly better player, and was phenomenal. And he's a year and a half or so removed from a serious injury. So that's the issue. I think that's more the issue for me. I think Minnesota did great in picking up Havlat and trading Gaborik, who's always raked them over the coals for money. Mm-hmm. And you trade that off you hand that headache off to the Rangers. You know, I'm not going to be happy to see him in the Eastern Conference, mind you, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Northwest Conference or Northwest Division definitely got better. I think overall, probably the Flames in Vancouver did the best work, and the Avs probably got better the least. I don't know if that's a good that's a bad sentence.
I think they got better. I think they got better in terms of where they certainly got better in terms of where their goals are.
Yes.
Okay. You know how their goals are aligned, which is that they needed to get they needed to go into quote unquote full rebuild. Mm-hmm. They got better when they drafted. The Avs got better when they drafted. I mean, they got Matt Duchene. So yeah. The Avs got better. I mean,
who
there's
I
no
saw
doubt
today,
about.
And oh my God, what a good stick handler. I think he was a little nervous in front of everybody at the development camp today. But oh my God, what a good stick handler. Just watching was phenomenal.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. We haven't had a chance to see Zach Kassian play at Buffalo's prospect camp. He's out with a hurt foot. But from everything I've heard, everybody is gushing about how well 6'8" Tyler Myers, the guy we drafted 12th overall last year, skates for a man who's 6'8". Mm-hmm. And just how smooth and how natural a 6'8" man can skate. And that's just scary. So that's all good as far as I'm concerned, because there's a good chance that he's really the wild card. If he's ready to play this year, then we actually have three right-handed defensemen, and we can Trey Talander and or Lidman off for a bag of pucks and not care, just get their salaries off the books. And we'll have, and I don't care if we go through a quote-unquote half rebuild or not. I'll be happy with it. I'll stack another year for that, to get that kind of level of development. So
yeah,
he's 19. He either has to play in Kelowna or he has to come up and play for Buffalo. He can't play in the A. So
I want to talk about a few of the other, just some of the bigger signings or other big changes in the from free agency. I think the first big change really comes from Detroit. Mm-hmm. With as many players as they lost a ton of players to free agency and players that have helped them quite a bit in this past season.
Right.
Obviously, the number one at the top of the heap was Marian Hossa.
Right.
Which is just I cannot believe he got a 12-year deal.
I'm still in shock. I mean, it's only 5.2 million cap hit, and I really like that signing. I think Hossa going to Chicago, I think it's a good signing by Chicago. I mean, how they're going to, other than the term, if it's a front loaded contract and Chicago's got the money to burn, then that's fine again, because Hossa's still young. He's only what, 29?
Yeah, I think you're right, but still, that would take him into what, 41?
Right.
If that's 12 years, a lot can happen in 12 years. And if those later years are, as you and I have discussed before, a tradable contract, then that's not as bad. My question is considering they have that, they have Huey, at some significant dollars, Brian Campbell for some significant money.
Very significant dollars.
And then on top of that, with the whatever these mistakes that were made in locking up their RFAs, right. All of a sudden they have to re-sign Christopher Stieg, Cam Barker at higher dollars than they probably wanted to.
Probably.
Isn't that just going to – to me, that just perpetuates that soon they're going to lose Sharp, Kane,
no,
Tays,
they'll lose.
Start coming up for significant money, and they're going to want to get paid.
What's
going
to have to happen is that – I'm more worried about the guys like Duncan Keith, and they're going to have to lose guys like Dustin Byfuglien.
Yeah.
Those are the guys, that's the guy they're not going to be able to keep. If they're going to keep Sharp, Taves, and Kane, they're going to have to they're going to have to let someone go. For Detroit, they had to lose Samuelson, Kopetsky. For me, the big one is Ty Conklin.
Yeah,
I mean,
he carried that team when Osgood was failing. And you know, he's been to the finals three times in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to lose the cup next year? Is it going to be Hoser or is it going to be Conklin? It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
But somebody's going to have to lose to the other one. It's going to be a coin flip in the conference finals.
Yeah, it's going to be, is it St. Louis versus Chicago in the conference finals this year? Is anybody willing to make that bet? I'm sure the people in Calgary aren't thinking that.
I would put money on it, but not good money. That's
no, I wouldn't. Certainly wouldn't put good money on it. But I can see Chicago definitely pushing to the conference finals this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your guy, Sammy Paulson, goes to Columbus.
His name is Sammy Paulson.
I knew you would like that.
I love that.
He goes to Columbus.
Yes.
That's a pretty good pickup.
That's a very good pickup. Paulson effectively is going to take the place of Manny Malhotra, who's still unsigned.
Mm-hmm.
Be a nice pickup for a team needs a good checking center. Mm-hmm. The guy I've got my eye on who hasn't been signed yet is Travis Moan. Someone just throw some money at him. I want a banger on the fourth line. I want just a good solid banger on like my third, fourth line in Buffalo. We could use Travis Moan. We're here. Get on the phone.
the
please.
One I'm surprised at is, and I figured he would go to LA until the Ryan Smith trade happened. Alex Tanguay still isn't signed by anybody.
No, he hasn't been signed by anybody.
I figured LA would be a really good fit for him. Wouldn't be a lot of high pressure. He could work with the younger guys, which I think he's a little more comfortable with, these days.
Right.
Could be a good solid second liner.
He is a good solid second liner. He plays a good two-way game. There's nothing really wrong with Tanguay. He's just not that all-world caliber player. And I think it was, I never expected him to do extremely well in Montreal because of the pressure. He just never seemed to be that kind of player,
mm-hmm.
Kind of high end player. Interestingly enough, 1, 2, 3. So let's talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay.
Rob Scuderi, Matthew Garon, and Cal Gill all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they re-sign a bunch of their guys. Guerin for another year, 1 year. Craig Adams for a couple of years at no money. And they got Goligoski signed for 3 years. That's actually a good contract. And
Chetan and, is cut off to the wind.
Who cares? Yeah. Who cares about Nur Chetan? They got
Fedotenko. I thought you would be entertained by that. I thought that you would really pick up on that and say, yes, yes.
What happened to Chetan? Where did he go?
Nothing. Nowhere.
What's that? Yeah, he hasn't been, he's been signed. Did anybody expect him to be signed? I find that what I found interesting was that they got Fedotenko re-signed, but that they've got a couple of holes that they're going to have to fill now. Or are they going to fill them up from within? We'll find out.
Yeah.
Is the big one was Bob Scuderi going to Los Angeles, giving him that good solid, beast on the blue line,
mm-hmm.
That Los Angeles probably is really going to need. So yeah, that's a good pickup there.
Yeah, which was the only move for St. Louis, oddly enough. I figured they'd do something else. But, with the Ryan Smith trade, that is something else.
Right.
Still.
No, the Ryan Smith trade is enormous for them. It really is. So, let's see. So, Conklin gets to go to St. Louis.
And also Michael Rupp, who has won Stanley Cups with New Jersey, goes to Pittsburgh for 2 years and pretty darn cheap, too. I mean, he's getting older. His game is getting a little slower. But still a solid, solid player, and
still
a lot
solid
of heart.
Fourth liner.
Yeah,
still a solid fourth liner. No, yeah, that's where they're going to fill in. But yeah, so if you look at the end of the day, where are we going? Raycroft to Vancouver. Yife.
You know, I hate to say it, and I don't want to upset you or anything, but Tom Benjamin had a good point about him.
Which is?
It was that you could basically send Raycroft up and down the system as much as you want, and nobody's going to pluck him off waivers.
Well, so, yeah, that is. And for league minimum, that is you can sign him to a one-way contract in name only.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. That is a good point by
Tom. So if you really need to bring up Schneider, you can, and nobody's going to bitch about right. What happens to Raycroft. Raycroft's pretty much safe, and that kind of protects Schneider as well, so...
Right.
I loved watching everybody turn and twist from the Raycroft signing. As I remember that he came out of the gate really, really hot last year. And he essentially took the number one title from Budai, but then, it just became both of them playing slogging through Play-Doh, and it was just horrible right. For both of them, so I really couldn't think of another good description off the top of my head other than slogging through Play-Doh, and as soon as I said it, I was like, yeah, that kind of fits actually.
That's pretty accurate. It is. Interestingly enough, let's talk about Tampa Bay Lightning. They were very busy, and if you really stop to think about it, they have a very interesting, pretty solid blue line at this point.
Yeah,
having signed Matias Olin in a clear case of friggin' tampering. There's no way Olin signs that contract without having without somebody having figured out, having somebody having not even talked terms. There's no way you get a deal done in 7 minutes. I just don't buy it.
No.
And it's a shame because, this is a side point at the end of the day. The whole concept that free agency starts at 12 noon on July 1st is nonsense. Free agency starts in January for all intents and purposes. Because the agents are out there doing their jobs, which is to figure the tenor of the market. Mm-hmm. They're influencing the players' decisions at every turn. You've got GMs talking to agents through third parties and through through assistants and over lunch and texting here. It's look, the whole thing is just do away with the entire concept that it starts on July 1st and that we're going to actually not prosecute like almost everybody who signs on July 1st for tampering.
Right, yeah. Who are they going after, really? It's Ron Wilson for saying that basically they would be interested in going after the Sedins before free agency.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah. Ron Wilson's just, he's just saying, he's just saying what everybody else is saying, what everybody else is doing. And, credit to Ron Wilson, who's always a stand-up guy and always tell you exactly what's on his mind. Because who's kidding who here? You don't negotiate a 7-year contract in 7 minutes.
No.
For $26.25 million? That's nonsense. And if that's what's going on in the NHL, why are we watching these people?
Yeah. They're
so profligate with their money and they're so free with their money that this is what they can do. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then, why are we even going through the song and dance of waiting until July 1st of all of these things?
Right.
Who cares if the Stanley Cup's won? Go sign your guys. Who cares?
Yeah.
Don't give me that crap.
It is all just complete nonsense. That at the end of the day, you can hear it in the voice of GMs as they talk on the leading up to free agency. That you start super gear because that's the guy I listen to all the time. But Jaroslav Spacek knew what was being offered to him by the two or three teams that were interested in him. Mm-hmm. Bergier talked about it in an interview that he taped at 10 o'clock that morning. Said he made an offer, a one-year offer, for roughly the same amount of money that Spacek eventually signed for 3 years for in Montreal. Mm-hmm. But Bergier already knew that contract was on the table at 10 o'clock in the morning. Now, how is this possible? It's obviously tampering, and obviously nobody, obviously it's some kind of tampering, and whatever. It's just it's all a big charade. It's all a big game, and it's all designed to create headlines on a particular day after the season's over when they need to have headlines and have them go, and then have all the fans, flood onto the message boards and go crazy about how their GMs are, morons and wastrels and everything else for not having signed half of the league. So
yeah.
I guess that's what it's all about. I'm not really sure.
I want to ask you real quick, because I'm curious, because I'm also looking back at some of the previous signings. Who are there any signings that you are looking at right now, and you're thinking in your head, it may look good right now, but that could really go bust in 2 years? Anything that stands
out to
you?
The Gabbert one is the one that really stands out. And I said it to Wyshynski the night it was happening, and Craig didn't actually post it up online. I said, I wouldn't have given him more than Tim Connelly money, because he's got an injury history like Tim Connelly. And frankly, he's not that much better a player than Tim Connelly when they're both healthy.
Yeah.
And they got Connelly signed for two years of $4.5 million. The other potential guy is Mike Camilleri.
Yeah.
Camilleri's got one good year under his belt. His contract year in Calgary. No, it was a great year he had. No, taking nothing away from the guy, but you know, 5 years, $6 million for 1 year's, you know, I mean, he's been on the right upgrade. He's been on the right path up, but you know, $6 million a year changes a man.
Yeah.
And he's playing in Montreal. Montreal is a big town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every moment. I mean, it's a lot. 2 years ago, I said the Scott Gomez deal was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So it was crazy. Yeah, you can't give Scott Gomez $7 million a year for 7 years.
Yeah, no.
Credit to Glenn Sather for getting anything for him. Because that was like the definition of an untradeable contract.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I don't know. But somehow he got it done. Because Gainey was even more desperate to remake his roster after the one he built failed. But you know, Gainey has the ability to do that. He's got the money.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I listened to the guys in Buffalo that complain, bitch, whine, and moan about Bregeer not doing this and not blowing up, not having the stones to blow up his team. I'm like, how is he supposed to do that?
Mm-hmm.
They have the second lowest total revenue in the league, and they're on welfare. You know, I mean, you go bust on Tom Golisano's door. I mean, he lives right down the road from me or whatever, you know, in Florida. Fine, you go bust on his door and say, hey, go blow this up and get rid of these $50 or $60 million worth of contracts and start all over again.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, right.
You have to have somebody dance with you on that. And, you know, if you signed it and it didn't work out, then why is somebody else going to want to take that on?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it happens. And at the time, and this is the real important issue, is that at the time most of these signings were made, we most of us say, yeah, that was a good idea. It was a good deal at that time.
Oh, absolutely.
And the forecasting element of this is really to go any more than 18 months out and think about to be able to forecast more than 18 months into the future as to what's going to happen in the NHL and how things are going to progress with the way prospects develop, with the way everything happens is crazy to even think that you could project out over a 18-month or even 2-year period. That's almost nuts. So, I mean, you know, I went over in our pre-draft discussion about how, you know, less than 10% of the players drafted after the first round ever see the NHL.
Right.
The second round.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and only what, 10% of first rounders or 40% of first rounders?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the way it is. I mean, it's a complete crapshoot.
And that's why the system is so gigantic. You know, junior and minor leagues and all of that, because there's plenty of players to fill it out that never make it.
Right. Yeah. And so to be a GM is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And to be good at all aspects of being a GM is nearly impossible.
Yeah.
So even – and, you know, and the post from Pension Plan Puppets a couple of weeks ago was really revealing that the holy grail of GMs, Ken Holland, was finally shown up to not be the holy grail of GMs.
Mm-hmm.
He's not very good at drafting.
No, that's true.
He's not very good at developing on a percentage basis. He may be good at finding quality over quantity. That's another different issue. But at the end of the day, but even that, you know, 14 guys out of 90 made it. Was it less than 14 guys out of 90 made it to the 95 made it to the NHL over 15 years, and even fewer than that made it to 200 games.
Mm-hmm. That's, all right. You know, I look back at the Ryan Smith signing. You know, I hate to keep talking about Ryan Smith in a way, but it's more about Francois Chiguer. When the year before Ryan Smith got signed and Scott Hannon, of course, at the same time,
right.
Francois Chiguer had one signing basically in free agency, and that was Tyler Arneson. And
right.
That cautiousness pretty much cost him. And and going into free agency the next year, everybody was screaming, we need somebody, make a big splash. Well, what'd he do? He made a big splash. He basically got the fourth guy of the top four free agents from that year. That was the Breer, Drury, Gomez year.
Right.
And he not only got him, but also got what he was hoping to be, was going to be a solid defenseman.
Right.
And a year and a half, 2 years later, it's looking like, it looks like a bust all of a sudden. And there's, but it was exactly what everybody wanted him to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the hard part. When we turn around and, we in Buffalo turn around and say, we're sitting here complaining about the Talander and Lidman contracts at this point because they're, $3.5 million each in salary and, a little less than that in total cap hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, fine. Those deals were made 3 years ago, and those were outstanding deals at the time, coming off the 2005-2006 run, mm-hmm. where we got knocked out by Carolina in the Eastern Conference Finals. So that's when those guys were signed to those deals. Vergeer made great deals on those guys. Now, I don't even think that the Lidman contract is even all that big a problem. It's Talinder who has not grown into that contract, so he's still a $2 million defenseman now being paid $3.5 million. But it's still no reason to really get on Regeer's case for the signing mm-hmm. or the situation, other than to say he's going to try and hold on to Hank for as long as possible to get the right return for him. That could be your issue, sure. But until you know what you have in terms of a full defense core for this season, until you know if Mike Weber is going to be able to step up, if Tyler Myers is going to be able to step up, if you can get Sakara signed before he gets plucked by the KHL, which is always a possibility. I mean, you've got these issues, and then you got to ask yourself: are you really willing to go with effectively three rookies on your blue line? Mm-hmm. I don't know, That's a real question, and two of the guys are second year players for all intents and purposes. So it's a real question. So it's not being a GM is hard. So yeah. You may be a really great drafter, you may be a really good trader, but you may not be particularly good at signing free agents, or you may not be particularly good at getting the right deal signed at the right time for the players you currently have as RFAs. Everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses, and at the end of the day, you sometimes have to ask yourself, what out there is really that much better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it really worth this kind of money right now? Is it really worth doing? Is it
right.
deal worth making?
Yeah. And is it really worth tearing down your whole staff and starting over again, firing a whole bunch of people, tearing it down and rebuilding it, especially if you're on a limited if you're on limited resources? You have to ask yourself as an organization, what's your better RO, what's your better return on investment? Is it to keep the current staff with its pluses and its weaknesses?
Mm-hmm.
And will that, is that worth, should you keep that, or is it really now time to move everybody out and start all over again?
Right.
That is a good question. And I think we as fans don't always see it from that point of view. We don't want to believe that this is a business. It is a business. And any organization should be run properly like a good business mm-hmm. in order for it to succeed in the long term, because that's ultimately the test of any good business, is whether or not it can produce, frankly, it can produce a profit. It's what it has to do in order to prove itself. Do you have something? Are you selling something that people are willing to buy for more than what you paid for it?
Yeah, and oftentimes that's not that just isn't the case, and you're stuck. And that's
right.
That's kind of the good thing and kind of the bad thing, and of the new CBA is that you're stuck with what you get. So you have to be smart. And in mm-hmm. another 5-6 years, if the CBAs continue down this path. Or if this is still the model of CBA that we're going to see in the next couple of years, we're going to see that. We're going to see things, we're going to see the market correct. We're going to see some smarter decisions. We're going to see less money handed out on July 1st.
Possibly.
Because there's not going to be as much to go around, and people are going to have to make smarter decisions because they made stupid ones before that they've been paying for.
Sure.
So,
And some teams can afford to buy themselves out of their bad decisions mm-hmm. in some ways. Philadelphia is going to find out that, just because you can buy yourself out of a contract doesn't mean you can buy yourself out of the cap hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's going to be the fun part, right? You might be able to get yourself out of the Breer contract. I mean, not that Ed Snyder wants to pay Danny Breer $34 million or 66% of $34 million to go away.
Right.
Because he then has to prorate the whole thing out over 15 years and over, 12 years and at half the cap hit over twice the length or whatever it is. It's like that's insane. He's gonna he's gonna be paying against the cap for a million and a half against the cap for the next 12 years. Who the hell would want to do that?
No.
But they're not going to. So it'll be interesting. It's as a pure free marketeer, I find the whole and as an economist, I find the whole thing very, very interesting to watch how if you add rules to a system, how those rules get circumvented and then the consequences of those rules that you place on a thing. What I find great is that the kids are getting paid younger.
Yeah.
And because of that, unrestricted free agency is effectively starting after a kid's entry-level deal is over. So, for all intents and purposes, as late as 23. 2 years to sign them after you draft them, and then a maximum three-year contract. So they become effectively, for all intents and purposes, unrestricted free agents at 23, maybe 24, depending on the quality of the player. And that's great because that lessens the whole need to get paid when they're 30, 31. They don't feel like they've been an indentured servant for all these years being underpaid. And so that then is going to lead to more rational decisions, I think, being made later on. I think we're still in those tween years where we still have some guys like Campbell, for example, who's a guy that had to wait till 30 to get his payday because he was brought up under the old system and paid $1.5 million a year until he got his payday at $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, under the new system, Brian Campbell would have never made it to the NHL because Brian Campbell at 23 wasn't really worth a contract.
Mm-hmm.
So. A contract worth more than league minimum.
Yeah.
So, again, it's going to be very interesting to see how things work out over the course of time. So,
I think it's definitely going to correct itself quite a bit. That we're going to see a lot less of these 10, 11 year contracts at so much money for somebody who's over the age of 30. I just don't see it.
Over the age of 35, I can see them wanting to prorate the cap hit until the guy's 50, because the over 35 clause, they can buy the guy out without any penalty. But it's a guy like Chris Pronger is 34. That's the thing that makes no sense.
Contract actually doesn't go into effect until after he's 35.
Right. That's true. Okay, so that may actually work out for them then. Okay, yeah. That's okay then.
Myrtle's been doing a lot of research on that, so we'll keep an eye on his site and see what he has to say. I think Myrtle's that about does it for the free agency. And
I think we made up for missing last week because we're at like an hour, right. 8 minutes and climbing. So so sorry everybody for not being around last week, but James was unavailable, and if James is unavailable, it's not going to happen because he's the prime mover here. I'm just the
You're the talent, man. You're the one who makes me look smarter. I ask a question, I shut up for a little while. That's how it works.
Well, then we have serious problems if I'm the talent. All right.
Next week, I know that it's things are slowing down. We'll probably have some shorter podcasts along the way, but I think there's probably still going to be plenty to look at. I know I'm going to be going to at least another development camp day. Here in Colorado, I'm sure there's plenty of people that are going to be signed or kicked to the curb, aka the KHL, the next couple of days. So I'm sure that you and I are going to have plenty to talk about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Anytime, James. We'll talk to you.
Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out how to subscribe on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or just leave comments about things that you heard us say. You can also comment by calling us at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. And you can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.